that Europeans in the early 13th century, in the decades following the sack of Constantinople, are ready to start thinking, well, there's no point in going to Jerusalem. Far from it. There was still a very widespread sense that we still must take back the holy city, that the humiliation of Hattin has to be removed. Now, by the end of the 13th century, that notion has clearly lost out. But in the decades following 1204, that's still there, despite these other areas of crusading activity, the war against the heretics. Innocent III and his successors always labored to send out more of the great crusades. And this can be seen in the fourth point I want to draw out in the second half of this lecture, and this is the unusual phenomenon of the Children's Crusade, which is subject to a lot of romance and myth. In some ways, it's comparable to the People's Crusade. It looks forward to the kind of millenarian movements and charismatic groups you get on the eve of the Reformation and later. There's lots of facile comparisons one can draw between the People's Crusade and all sorts of movements of the humble to achieve piety. There's two groups that we know of that are clearly documented. One is by a boy named Stephen in the area of, around Orléans, who in May of 1212 showed up. And this is while the Albigensian Crusade is raging. There's no reinforcements sent to Outremer. There's battling going on in Spain and in the Baltic. Stephen, this peasant boy, and he might be 15 or 16 years old, I mean, adolescents. They're not really children as we understand it. He presents a letter to the King of France, of all people, the cynic Philip II, that he had a vision from Christ. He had a letter from Christ that told him that he was certified to go out and preach. You know, Philip isn't pretty impressed by this. I mean, things like this wouldn't impress Philip anyway. But many do listen to his preaching, particularly in areas of northern and eastern France, traditional recruiting grounds for crusaders ever since the First Crusade. And large numbers of adolescents stream down the Seine-en-Rhône in 1212, in the summer of 1212, heading to Marseille, convinced that this peasant boy is inspired. He's a preacher. There's images to Exodus. They show up at Marseille. They expect the seas to part. Of course, they don't. They're a little bit disappointed. Many die en route because there's no provisions or organization. And we're told a really peculiar story. Whether it's true or not, it's suspect in the eyes of most scholars. It only comes through one, essentially through one manuscript. And that is two merchants, Genoese, I believe, in Marseille, William the Pig and Hugh the Iron, the names are delightful, actually offered pilgrimage, passage to Egypt, and then sold these kids in the slave markets. And one of them shows up 18 years later and explains what actually happened to them. The story's rather suspect. The other group were German, adolescents, inspired again by a similar peasant boy, 15 or 16 year old, a fellow named Nicholas in the area of Cologne, and they stream in great numbers shortly after the French crusaders depart, coming over the Alps, many dying en route. Some of them arrive at Genoa, racing down again to the sea with the same expectation, oh, the sea is going to part and we're going to have a new Moses and walk on dry land to Jerusalem. None of this takes place. Nicholas disappears from the record. We don't know what happens to him, although his father is later hanged back in Germany because so many of these kids die and never make it back. Some of them settle in Genoa. A few of them show up in Rome, and Innocent III simply tells them, please go home. I mean, you're not going to do anything. But what these two adventures or efforts at crusading indicate is that not only is there still a very powerful, enthusiastic sense that Jerusalem must be recovered, and that certainly the notion that writing off the holy cities is not an option, even for the papacy and in the high courts of Europe, but also that what we would call enthusiastic and millenarian movements in Christianity still associated that great event with place, that it had to take place in Jerusalem. And this is very medieval. This is the whole premise behind pilgrimage in the Middle Ages. And after 1300, when the Crusades have failed, that's no longer an aspect of most European millenarian movements. In fact, most millenarian enthusiastic movements want to create a new Jerusalem, wherever it be, whether it be in Germany, whether it be in the New World. But that is going to be a significant shift and Christian perceptions of their faith and of who they are. That is that loss of sense of place, which we'll talk about in the concluding lecture. And you can already see that the Children's Crusade are still right in line with the traditions of pilgrimage, and there must be a response. And those will be the 5th through the 8th Crusades that are coming up in a future lecture.